Well, so far you've heard my voice, but then I brought two friends along. Next on the mic is my man, Jer. Come on, Jer, sing that song.
David Tyler.
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts and download the OTB Sports app.
But at 7:51, it's time for The Beef Is Real.
Well, I don't like them. And I don't have to work with people I don't like.
Patrick Vieira is 6'4". So I sound about Gary Neville. He says, come and have a go at me.
You should have gone to Specsavers, Charlie.
Well, maybe you should go also then, Jeff, because you couldn't see driving home the other night.
Don't you ever talk about me!
So I think your argument's back and forward there, Tommy. That's the point.
I'm wondering...
Just let me finish. Let me finish.
I'm let you finish.
It's pure constipated on
you. Can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
If you're going to be critical, then you've got to make sure you've got something to back it up with, don't you?
Maybe the coaches were maybe panicking a little bit.
To me, you've got to have a little bit of a better record than that.
The beef is real.
Unfortunately, the beef between Dublin and Meath in recent years hasn't been very real. It exists, I want to say, because the Dublin versus Meath beef always exists. Two counties who straight up hate each other, I would say. Obviously, when one team's in the ascendancy, it's not quite hate, but it still exists, doesn't it?
Do you ever sometimes make the mistake of reading the ingredients in the packet and what you think is like ham is reformed meat product? That's kind of the level of beef that we're talking about here. It's not prime cut, it's not fillet steak, it's reformed beef trimmings.
And reformed beef trimmings, I would say, form an important part of our meat intake as a population. And reformed meat trimmings is where we are going to stay today. Because I got interested in this, I was like, surely this period right now is the most one-sided era in the history of the Dublin-Meath rivalry. Because when I think of like past Meath teams, I'm like,
they were always good.
They were always, that's what I've been thinking. They were always good. That this was always a great rivalry. That this was never as one-sided as it is now. Now, in fairness, this is really the nadir for Meath at the moment. But there was another era when things were also one-sided enough in Dublin's favour.
Not as bad as this, is that what you're saying? It was bad, but not as bad as this.
Scorelines weren't as bad, but the results were as bad. So we're going to go back to 1964 until 1986, where Meath never beat Dublin in the Championship. That is 22 years. Between 1970 and 1986, Meath did not win a single Leinster title. It's still their longest drought without winning a Leinster title post-World War II. In that period, they played each other seven times, and it's all distilled down to one 11-year period, 1974 to 1984. All seven of their meetings in that 22-year period came in those 10 years. Dublin won six of the games, and then the remaining game was a draw. Right now, in 2021, Dublin are currently on a six-game winning streak against Meath in the Championship, so there's a bit of a parallel there. I guess what I'm trying to say is that we expect this rivalry to tilt towards Meath over the next couple of years, as it is our last chance to go back and focus on the Dublin-Meath beef of the 70s and 80s, the only other time when things were as horrific as they are now for Meath people. So I apologise to all our Meath friends out there, but we just had to do it because, as I say, we believe that the hook is now, and maybe not in the near to distant future. So we're going to start in 1974, the start of this 11-year period. This is Kevin Heffernan's full season as Dublin manager. Dublin obviously coming from quite a low ebb when he takes over. They hadn't been to a Leinster final in 9 years at that point, which just seems scarcely believable at this point. It was a team that was in certain quarters derided. One of their early games in that Leinster Championship in 1974 was against Wexford. That game was played as a curtain raiser to the league final, which was between Kerry and Roscommon in Croke Park. There's a great line from the Irish Times that day that says, "There were moments when Dublin's neater forwards were just as guilty as Wexford of some scandalous attempts to land points. There were at least a couple of guffaws from the mainly Roscommon-Kerry interested crowd in the Hogan stand. Kerry and Roscommon people were laughing at Dublin play football in 1974. This is the standard of team, or the reputation of team, that Kevin Heffernan took over in 74. They get to the Leinster final, and it is Dublin versus Meath. 80 minutes played in those days. Remember, there was a five-year experiment there in the early 70s where they went for 80 minutes. The full-time score was Dublin 114, Meath 1-9. There was only 37,000 in Croke Park that day. You can actually see the empty seats in the crowd. Just to give you a little bit of context, there was 50,000 in Killarney for Cork versus Kerry in the Munster final. this year. There's like, I mean, I think I saved this image in of the Meath kit at the time. They were wearing blue shorts, I think it just probably summed up where Meath were at the time, because the blue shorts were absolutely terrible. Once they moved to the white shorts, that's when the Meath opportunities start to go on the uptick. We can have a look at some of the teams here from the programme of this 1974 Leinster final. It's quite small print, so I'll just go through a couple of them. A couple of the standout names in that Meath team. Ken Rennicks, one of the best players, I think it's fair to say, to never win an All-Ireland. He was an All-Star in 1975. You'd Matt Kerrigan, who along with Rennicks would become an All-Star in 75 after beating Dublin in the league final. So those two were there.
Does Matty Kerrigan score a famous goal for Meath later on that is involved? Is he still around the squad when they get good?
He is, and I mean, he is their All-Star in 75, as I say. And he does end up staying around for a number of years, unlike Ken Rennicks, who just kind of misses out completely on the glory years. They don't win a single All-Star from 75 until 83. So this is, Rennicks and Kerrigan, this is kind of like the tail end of, well, not so much Kerrigan, but some of this team is the tail end of a really good Meath team in the 1960s. Mick Fay there, corner forward. Darren Fay's uncle is in there as well. The Dublin team then, this was starting to become a pretty notable team. You'd Bernard Brogan Sr. on the bench. This is his debut season. You'd James McCarthy's father, John, in a corner forward. It was Anton O'Toole's debut season. Just watching back some of Anton last night. He just absolutely sensational of the footage you can actually get of this era.
There's some team when you go through it. Paddy Cullen in goals, Gayle O'Driscoll, Sean Doherty, Robbie Kelleher. Look at other names that I recognise. Obviously, Brian Mullins, Tony Hanahoe's on the team, David Hickey's on the team.
Yeah.
Jimmy Keaveney
now scores 1-8 that day against Meath, but he'd come out of retirement earlier that season, so he'd gone away for a couple of years and had come back to the Dublin team.
David
and that Kelleher's was
on the bench.
Yeah, and Brian Mullins, it was his arrival that year. He was 19 at this point.
Right.
There was a great series of pieces done in the Herald last year, the decades of the Dubs. And in the 1970s, Sean Potts wrote a piece and he said, "What is extraordinary in hindsight is that many of the players who were to become household names in Irish sport were part of the struggling setup for Dublin in the late 60s and early 70s. Jimmy Keaveney, Tony Hanahoe, Sean Doherty, David Hickey, Paddy Cullen, Gay O'Driscoll, Pat O'Neill, Annan Larkin and John McCarthy." A little bit of a parallel with Cluxton and Bernard Brogan and Alan Brogan and those teams in the late 2000s who would go from being underachievers, maybe not underachievers, but teams who disappointed quite often to all of a sudden becoming one of the greatest teams of all time. That 1974 final, if that Wexford game against Dublin got derided by the Irish Times also went in two-footed this time on the 1974 final. Aidan McCarthy was reporting and he said, "Dublin's ineptitude in an attack, the grossly substandard display by Meath, and the preponderance of fouls which had referee Paddy Cullen of West Meath in constant action all contributed to a less than auspicious game, a fact which could not be disguised by the rapturous acclaim of the success-starved Dublin attendants who gave their team a vociferous allegiance not merited by their performance." And this was the key, this was a key component of Heffo's army. It was the people who came to watch Heffo's army play, the soccer crowd, so to speak, who all of a sudden had a really glamorous team in Gaelic games to actually get behind. After they beat Galway in the All-Ireland final that year, "You'll Never Walk Alone" is said to have been sang from the stands after Dublin win that All-Ireland, which kind of sums up, the soccer attitudes that would have existed there and that were not so much welcomed into Croke Park, but took over Croke Park and made it the Hill. Just one other piece of note from that season to kind of sum up where that Dublin team was at reputation-wise. They played Cork in an All-Ireland semi-final and RTE only had one outside broadcast unit. So they decided not to broadcast that game and instead send their OB unit to the RDS for the Dublin Horse Show. So Dublin versus Cork, not glamorous enough at that time to get live television. But the Dubs were glamorous enough to get their own version of Jimmy's Winning Matches or Football's Coming Home written about them. The memories a good St. Vincent's band wrote, the likes of Heffo's Army. I mean, it would be rude at 8 a.m. this morning not to just play a little bit of the likes of Heffo's Army. Let's give us a blast of that. All the Dubs are back, the Dubs are back. Let the railway end go by me, 'cause Hill 16 has never seen the likes of Heffo's Army. We'll be marching down from Ringsend and from Ballyfermot too, from Eastwood. I mean, you kind of get the picture. It's all up on YouTube. It's like, I mean, as far as 1970s songs go, it's relatively memorable.
Not class.
Yeah, not many teams got a song written about them, especially not me.
Why are we talking over this? We should be listening. This is great.
Let's give us the next chorus here. Yeah, so that's...
But it's got that syrupy embrace of nostalgia. And
yes.
Like, it sounds like every 1970s theme tune from a TV show that is like Saturday morning RT are still banging out the cartoons because they haven't bought any new stuff. But, like, there's something eternal about that.
Yeah. No, 100%. Like, there is... Again, it's kind of that feeling of nostalgia for a time that you weren't even around for, about some of those tunes from the 1970s. I would like to see somebody edit a 1970s style opening credits with pictures from the 1970s Dublin team over that song, because that doesn't exist on YouTube at the moment. But
Scratch Your Back. That's the
hook at the start and after each chorus. Meath, we're not going to get this sort of treatment whatsoever at any point in this era. This is a bit of a spoiler, I guess, for what's about to come over the next little while. As I say, this sort of kind of made in a laboratory beef between these two teams. The next time they would meet would be a couple of years later. It would be 1976. It'll be the Leinster final once again. And the theme of all of these matches between Dublin and Meath, first of all, is that it's very hard to find footage on YouTube of any of these games. The only thing that exists on YouTube in the 70s and 80s is Dublin versus Kerry. That's all that exists. It's very hard to find any footage of these Dublin versus Meath games. However, what you do notice is that the scorelines were very tight. It is not like this current lack of beef. There was at least huge contests going on, and Dublin just pipped them on every single occasion. They had a goal to spare in the 76 Leinster final, less than a goal to spare, 2 points, 2-8 to 1-9. The changes around this time were mostly on the Meath side. You have Joe Castles, who's now a starter, come 76. You Colm O'Rourke, who'd come in 1975, which we'll get to in just a moment. But there's also a documentary, which I'm sure a lot of you are aware of, called Dublin in the Rare Old Times, which was presented by Colm Meaney. The full thing, again, available on YouTube. And I just want to play a quick clip from this documentary. And what you'll hear here at the start is him talking to David Hickey, and what you'll hear at the end is him talking to Paddy Cullen. Have a look.
You had a couple of new additions in 76. Pat O'Neill and Kevin Moran came into the side.
Yeah, Kevin Moran and Tommy Drum actually was a very significant introduction to, and Pat. Yeah. And it certainly did change the game around a bit. These three fellas just happened on the scene and did change the force of the team, so to speak.
And did they change the way you played? Did they change?
No,
the
unfortunately, they couldn't. None of them could kick a ball. I mean, they couldn't kick it as high as Georgie Wilson and Paddy Riley, but they couldn't pass it either. And Jimmy Keevy will vouch for that. I mean, in fact, myself and Anton O'Toole's job was to actually launder sort of, to take this raw product and make it into usable sort of currency for Jimmy inside, who liked it hitting the blue,
And Leinster was always the most difficult problem.
It's still difficult. I mean, Meath were very close in those days as well.
Meath were very unlucky. I remember them winning, particularly in Leinster finals.
I think it was Colm
O'Rourke missed a penalty, and if Colm had got that penalty, we were in trouble.
Yeah.
Did you put the side
again? I did the same thing.
Yeah.
And he was very unlucky because, I saw a bit of paint falling off. He hit the outside of the post.
Really, was that close?
Right? Yeah. I mean, a little bit of paint fell off the post. I swear to God. Mm. And if he hit the post and it came back, he could have stuck it in the net.
Yeah.
So that's the difference, and you need a bit of luck.
Paddy Cullen on the Mount Rushmore of Irish hair, when it comes to Irish sporting hair. Like, it was brilliant now, and it's amazing back then when you look at it. It hasn't changed a bit, it's just changed colour. But it's every single follicle is still there.
And for hair lovers out there, there's a particular treat coming in just a moment for you on hair from a match programme. But just to put into some sort of clarity there, the Dubs get to six All-Ireland finals along this period. Again, another parallel to today. That final, which they win by 2 points, just to reiterate there, Colm O'Rourke, he's only 18 years of age at this point. He has a penalty. He hits the post with it. If that goes into the back of the net, like, they're Leinster champions.
Kaya Saka.
They're Leinster champions. Maybe the course of history gets changed a little bit. I mean, Dublin are on course for greatness. They were almost deemed great at that point. 76 is another big year for them. Later on that year, though, Colm O'Rourke goes down in a challenge in a club game I think it's against Walterstown in November. Terrible conditions. Gets taken to hospital. His knee ligaments, medial and cruciate, both done. And the Colm O'Rourke year is officially classified as just a horrible year, I think it's fair to say. Having been that close to putting Meath through from Leinster and into the All-Ireland series, and then having that career-threatening injury, it is just such... It's a sliding doors moment, essentially, in this rivalry. A rivalry that maybe a lot of people had written off as something that maybe didn't exist, that it was all one-sided. But Meath were bloody close. I do want to fast forward on to 1977. Again, it's the following year, it's another Leinster final. Gerry McEntee is now in the Meath side. The full-time score in this final was Dublin 1-9, Meath 8 points. And this is what I want to show you now. This is the front of the match day programme from the 1977 Leinster final. Now, these are heads of hair. Tony Hanahoe, Matt Kerrigan, Kevin Moran and Matt Rennix. I think, like, Matt Kerrigan in particular. Like, that is a proper head of hair, and that is a proper 1970s.
It's mad. It looks like a wig. It's program. So good.
I love that. Love the yellow pops off the screen. Another publication, though, from 77. There's also, sorry, a couple of photos here that we have from the game itself, as Dublin's narrow win over Meath. Again, extremely hard to find good imagery from around that time. You've got the likes of Robbie Kelleher and Cormac Rowe there on the right-hand side. You've got Kevin McConnell being surrounded by people on the bottom, and then Anton O'Toole in action at the top left. Dublin's narrow win over Meath, the headline for that game. It could have been a headline for the entire era here as well. In the 1977 Meath yearbook, a piece written by Tom Duffy was entitled The Tragedy of Colm O'Rourke. Just to read this out, he had the potential. He had the potential to become one of the greatest Meath forwards ever. This high tribute was all the more valuable when it is realised it was the great Peter McDermott who made it. It becomes all the more ironic when the player to whom he was referring is still only 20 years old, played for the county for only 14 months, and tragically will never play for them again. Colm O'Rourke played a full forward for the Meath Miners 2 years before he graduated to the senior team in 1975. His last outing in the county colours was in the same competition against Cork in December the following year, 2 weeks before he sustained a leg injury in the final of the Navan Carpets Senior Football Tournament final. In trying to finish a penalty, he twisted on his knee and damaged three ligaments and a cartilage. 1 year and a major operation later, he feels that he must begin to reconcile himself to the fact that he will never play again.
Wow.
I just think that, again, something that we're not fully appreciative of is that how that career was totally written off. Today, if that happened, if that injury happened, there would be question marks about how well a player can come back or otherwise.
Or how long it's going to take, really.
Or how long it's going to take. In the 1970s, with the lack of advancement maybe in medical sciences at that point, he was written off. The career was over. The tragedy of Colm O'Rourke was an article that was printed in the Meath yearbook of 1977.
Wow.
Late 70s then, 78, Dublin are Leinster champs again. Meath are dumped out by Kildare, 79. Dublin squeezed past Offaly in the final. Offaly now the coming force in Leinster. Meath have been beaten by Offaly in the semi-final. We move on to 1980 then, the Leinster semi-final is when Meath and Dublin meet again. This is the biggest Dublin win of this era. Meath 2-7, Dublin 3-13. This is when things start to turn a little bit sour for Meath over the next little while. Barney Rock is starting to come into the Dublin side of things. He comes off the bench to score a point in that win. They eventually lose to Offaly, though, in the Leinster final, Dublin. And I was having a think last night around who was the manager before Boylan comes in. And it's very hard to actually find any clarity on it. As far as I'm aware, Mick O'Brien was their trainer in 1977. Desi Ferguson then was their trainer after that. He obviously would have won an All-Ireland medal, a couple of All-Ireland medals with Dublin, 1958 and 1963, and also played in an All-Ireland hurling final with Dublin in 1961. So I'm not sure what part of Dublin he moved to, but he's from Kells and Dublin player who had managed Meath around that time. But it gets worse and worse for them shortly after that. 1981, Meath are knocked out by Wexford. In 1982, Meath are knocked out by Longford. This is the low ebb for Meath football. But the end of 1982 and into 1983, the Messiah arrives. Sean Boylan comes in and things don't change immediately, to put it bluntly. Again, kind of like Kevin Heffernan, in hindsight, things look great and it was truly and undeniably a golden era. But the people weren't overly excited about what was in store for this rivalry. The 1983 Leinster quarter-final is probably the peak of this slim piece of beef that we're talking about today. There was only 25,000 at both games. Both of them played in Croke Park. The first game was a draw 2-8 to 2-8. And we talk about 1991 and the saga of that summer as one of the great Meath-Dublin encounters. But these two games in 1983 were both brilliant. So in the 2-8 to 2-8 game, you had Jimmy Fay, who was Darren's dad. He was unavailable. So Greg Toomey had to stand in as goalkeeper. They were a point up shortly after half-time. And I was watching the highlights of this. This is on YouTube. Barney Rock sends in this massive effort from about 40 yards. And Toomey just makes a complete aims of it. Slides under his body into the back of the net. Then later in the second half, he gets caught in possession out by the corner flag. And Dublin score another goal off that. Again, this is another possible sliding doors moment where Dublin could have been beaten by Meath in the Leinster quarter-final. And who knows, maybe the Boylan era gets kick-started a little bit earlier in the 1980s. But it doesn't happen. They go to a replay. Dublin win the replay, 3-9 to 16 points. Another Meath missed penalty in that game. But, and I want to say a big thank you to Jack the Hack 19 on Twitter for posting this. Barney Rock scores this goal.
Anton O'Toole out, way out from full forward, and controlled that very well he did. Now Kieran Duff back to John Cairns. Anton O'Toole calling for it. This is Barney Rock, and they shot. What a goal! Oh, what a goal by Barney Rock!
Thunder bastard, I think it's fair to say, from Barney Rock at that point. For any of the audio listeners with us this morning, just gets the ball on the edge of the, around 14 yards out from goal, turns around, three Meath men, including the goalkeeper between him and goal, and he's like, nah, screw this, top corner, far corner, absolutely nails it. Dublin, obviously, an incredible year after that. They go on and win the All-Ireland final. That's the 12 Apostles game from against Galway. This Dublin team is young, it's talented. You've John O'Leary in goal now, maturing into a pretty good shot stopper. He's 22 at this point. You've a full back line of Jerry Hargan, Ray Hazley, Tommy Drum, all in their 20s. You've Pat Canavan in there at the age of 23. You'd like to have Jim Renane in midfield, who was 24, and John Cairns, who was 19. Then you'd the likes of John Caffrey, Pillar's brother. You'd Tommy Conroy and Kieran Duff, who's only 22 at that point, coming through. Barney Rock still only 22, and John McNally 19. So this is a young Dublin team that the future still looks relatively bright for them. And then the following year, 1984, which is where we wrap up, is the end. The last time Dublin managed to get the boot in on Meath before the beef gets a little bit beefier. They beat them 2-10 to 1-9. Barney Rock with another 1-4. In this game against Meath. Kieran Duff is brilliant that day. He kicks 1-4, all of it from play. Dublin go all the way to the All-Ireland final and lose to Kerry that year in 1984. It was a big year though. 84 is the turning point for Meath. And it is a very defined moment where it turns for them. It was actually earlier in 1984 when the GAA played the Centenary Cup, this open draw knockout competition to mark 100 years of the GAA, and Meath ended up winning it. They beat Monaghan in the final. And in an interview only last year, I think, with Meath GAA TV, Sean Boylan spoke about the importance of that Centenary Cup. Have a listen.
The county had gone through a barren enough period for a good while. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, and that can happen, a whole series of injuries and so on. You know what I mean? So this just changed everything.
This was the first win since 1975 league.
Yeah, but you had 76 and 77 against Dublin. And those Leinster finals were tough and hard. And, it was such a great Dublin team at the time. But Meath had great players, but maybe we hadn't enough of the quality that you needed at the same time. Maybe not. Maybe just it was the level that Dublin were at. But all I can tell you is, from Joe Castle and Colm O'Rourke and Jerry and Mick Lyons and so on, they had all experienced all those matches. So when they got a sniff of Croke Park, they wanted to stay in Croke Park. And that was absolutely huge. And there was also a huge thing that I have to give the county board credit for, was when we played Dublin in the first round of Leinster in 1983, the replay should have been in Abbey. And it would have meant a lot to the town at the time. And I asked the board, would they mind if I got the lads, I want to get the lads back into Croke Park because I want them to get used to playing in there. And I said, I know it'll affect the town, but we'll pay it back. And anyhow, the replay was in Croke Park. And then the first round of the National League in 83 was against Dublin in Parthalton. 25,000 people there, right? Micheál O'Hare's last radio commentary, okay?
Yeah.
And so the town was buzzing. But, like, it was a big move for the county board to make at the time to say to me, like, I was the coach and trainer. There was no such thing as managers at the time, right? And, you know, that had that faith in what you were trying to do with the squad of players, you know?
And then, lo and behold, a couple of years later, the rivalry ends. The 6 out of 7 Dublin wins is put on hold because Meath beat them in 86, they beat them in 87, they beat them in 88 and win the All-Ireland Football Championship in 87 and 88 after beating Dublin. So the rivalry changes, and then you go into the 90s, those 4 games in 91, obviously, the peak of the beef. But that's basically it. The thin sliver of meat that we're enjoying at the moment between Dublin and Meath did exist once upon a time before, but it was right before a glorious Meath era. Maybe the same thing's about to happen.
Well, I don't like him. And I don't have to work with people I don't like.
Patrick Vieira is 6'4". Starts having a go at Gary Neville. Is this coming to have a go at me?
You should have gone to Specsavers, Charlie.
Well, maybe you should go also then, Jeff, because you couldn't see driving home the other night.
Don't you ever talk about me!
So I think your argument's back and forward there, Tony. That's the point.
I'm wondering...
Just let me finish. Let me finish.
I'm let you finish.
You're constipated,
you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
If you're going to be critical, then you've got to make sure you've got something to back it up with, don't you?
Maybe the coaches were maybe panicking a little bit.
To me, you've got to have a little bit of a better record than that.
The beak is real.